RadioInfluence.com.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Friday edition of the Dark to Light podcast with
Frankie Val on the drums.
And Beans, you play the drums every Friday.
Yeah, well, it's a good day to drum.
It's a drumming kind of day. Do you guys have sun there today at least?
It's peaking, actually, just as you said that, it peaked back out from behind the clouds again. But it's in and out, and it's a cool, breezy 67-degree morning so far right now. Not too bad, but I closed the windows.
It is cold. I want to say cold. It's chilly here, too. I was just remarking to my husband as I traveled up the staircase. He said, isn't it? It's a little chilly today. And I said, yeah, it is, actually.
It's a bit nipply out.
So I want to start off by, I asked for permission to talk about this, but didn't get it, but I'm going to do it anyway because it's so cool and I'm not going to provide any identifying information. But I think this is so awesome. I got an email from somebody who said that their family does soapbox racing and asking permission to be able to use our information or our show logo or whatever on the cars as a sponsor. And I was like, oh my gosh, that is so cool.
That is cool.
I was like, oh my gosh, that's the coolest thing ever. So these kids are going to be driving these soapbox cars and it's going to be Team Dark to Light. And there's going to be, I just am so blown away by this.
I got to see these cars. It's going to be like, you ever see the 1990s Little Rascals movie?
Yeah, yeah.
Actually, Donald Trump was in that.
Dear Darla.
Whose father was Donald Trump in that one?
I don't. Was it that little snotty rich kid?
The rich snot.
I think so. That there was one of those kids in every single 90s movie. He was the same kid in basically all of them too.
Yeah. Hold on. Let me see. Donald Trump, Little Rascals. Oh, here it is. Donald Trump and Little Rascals. It's 30 seconds long. I hope that you can hear this. Wait.
You're going to play it on your phone?
Oh, do you have it?
No, you play it on your phone.
I'm going to play it on my... Oh, actually, no, you're right. I can't.
Put it on your phone. Just put message. I'm going to read something.
You do that.
Yeah. You message it to yourself and then play it. And it Buckwheat reads the love letter to Darla. And he says, Dear Darla, I hate your stinking guts. You make me vomit. You're scum between my toes. Love, Alfalfa. So cute.
Well, here's Donald Trump getting a call from his son, who is in the soapbox car that is, of course, all decked out and it has all this technology on it. And the kid has taken Darla away from Alfalfa. And let's see. I forget what he says, but here it goes. He's calling his dad.
Race.
Waldo, you're the best son money can buy.
Thanks, Dad.
And that's it. And that's the thing here. That's where this man popped up constantly, especially for kids from the 90s. This is just where he was just always all over the place. And if it weren't for the crazy cultists that we're up against right now, I really think that we would be having one hell of a fun time.
Wouldn't we?
We'd be having one hell of a time.
Yeah, he was great. I mean, he was just great. He was great. I mean, and everybody loved him. He had so many.
Not everybody. There's a lot of people. But there was no hatred. People might have thought he was obnoxious, but.
No, but what I'm saying is he was in every rap song. People wanted to be Donald Trump.
We got rooked from having a really, really good time.
Yeah.
Some people are having, some of us are having a good time.
I'm having
time,
a grand old time. I don't know.
But, you know, but I lament the fact that there are people out there who are languishing in mental illness. I mean, this it really is, it is a syndrome. TDS is real.
I mean, I sometimes I sit back and I think about what we're going through right now as a country, and I'm like, are we really living through this right now?
Yeah.
I mean, it is insanity. So, for example, good segue, Frank. Congrats. But by the way, thank you to the cool, amazing, amazing Dark to Light listener who's now got a soapbox team named after the show. Amazing. So much fun. I love it. Anyway, soccer. Women's soccer. As if, you know, in all the other countries across the world, they call it football. But here, football is men on a gridiron.
Yeah.
Right? Here it's soccer. And women's soccer has an opportunity, I guess, to do something cool. I'm not really following the story, but the United States women's national soccer team captain Megan Rapinoe slammed after ignoring national anthem as an FU to Trump.
And oh, God.
There's a Getty Image photo of her doing the okay sign.
What, white power?
Yes.
You mean the white power sign?
So I shared on Twitter. I said, oh my God, she's a Nazi.
She doesn't like Trump, but she's a Nazi. Oh, see, this is, wow. Well, hey, you want to know something? I hate to say anything disparaging about female sports, but so, I mean, every 5 years or so, somebody reminds me that the WNBA is still a thing. And people like this chick don't really do much to help out the promotion of the sport when it's already hard enough to have any of that viewership match what men's sports is. And then you're going to add this to it. What do you think that's going to do? Attract loyal fans?
I mean, they're just making, you know, they're already talking about the income disparity between men's and women's sports.
No, it's the interest disparity.
Well, exactly. It's because they don't have anybody who wants to watch that crap. I'm sorry. Like, I don't think that there's like a massive market out there for women's softball.
There isn't, even though I love watching it.
It's
fine. I do like whenever the playoff, the college playoffs roll around. I love watching it, especially since I know the dimensions of the field are pretty much like Little League. So it's cool to see people play a fast paced, really high skilled sport on a field that small. So I love watching women's softball. I also like, what the hell is, I liked watching it popping, it all pop up in Olympic settings as well. But let's just be honest, when you're taking this and you're going to commercialize it, then you're dealing with market forces here. And it's just, you can't artificially inflate interest in the sport. And when you say there's a disparity of funding, like, no, there's not.
It's just that they're not bringing in those major corporate sponsorships.
Exactly. The funding's exactly where it should be because that's what the market has placed a value on it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's just and then, of course, here's the thing, Tracy. I don't want to sit here and say women's sports suck. Because it doesn't. There's a lot of great athletes out there. It's just that there's just certain realities about the market and about interest and demand for women's sports. But when you start implying that women's sports is not on the level of men's sports because there's some kind of sexism going on there, or there's just lack of funding, which is the reason why they say that schools, public schools are failing. There's not enough funding, but the more you pump in, the more they fail for some reason. And then of course, then you add the political aspect to it. And then you know what you do? Then you take something that should just be a very cut and dried, economic and, market-based scenario, and you add this emotion there, that then people just start getting resentful, and then they start saying things like, "Ah, you know what? Women's sports sucks anyway." Then it just starts becoming a poking and prodding thing. So you strip away all of the politics, and it has nothing to do with people thinking that female athletes are not worth the time.
That's the thing that always bothers me. I'm like not that kind of person. Like, and I know there's a lot of women who listen to the show who feel the same way. Like, I don't understand. Like, I I don't know. I guess I don't know. I'm just going to bite my tongue.
No, it's part of the trap, Tracy. It's part of the trap. Everybody gets, they get prodded into a position where it almost becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. At this point, the World Cup, if somebody, a couple more people over there can turn their back or take a knee and they can get a couple more people to just out of anger say, you know what, women's sports sucks. If they can just get a couple people out of anger to say that, then all of a sudden they have their self-fulfilling prophecy. Then they have the evidence that the reason why women's sports is summarily ignored by both men and women, okay? Women like watching men's sports more than watching women's sports.
It's just the truth.
This is just the truth. But when you push people and you get them to say things just emotionally, then they can use that as evidence that all of their greatest whining is justified. It's so sick what we deal with.
We had a win yesterday, though, Frank. We had a win in this social justice warrior PC nonsense culture that we're in.
What was that?
Oberlin College. Did you hear about that?
No.
Do you know what happened there in 2016?
You'll probably remind me. I'll probably
no.
Remember.
You will. You'll remember. I'm sure that you've talked about this because it's something. It was a Gibson's Bakery versus Oberlin College. So there's this bakery that's near this big college, and basically what happened is these a couple of African American students tried to buy alcohol with a fake ID and shoplift from the store, right? And so the owner of the store chases them outside. They get into an altercation outside, and a couple more students joined. I think, I'm not mistaken, if the student, I'm not sure if I am getting it right, if the student that went in initially was African-American or if it was outside that the students that joined were, but there was a race component in here. And basically what happened was the students protested as organized by, and the college withdrew all of its business from this bakery, saying like they were racist and it was a race motivated thing, and that, you know, they just attacked these kids because they were black and there was nothing behind, you know, them shoplifting and all of this stuff. What happened is they lost tons of business. There were boycotts. There were protests outside their bakery. It was really a big deal. This was a bakery that I think that had been there since the 1800s, family owned. Huge, huge thing. A lot of community service. They did a lot of great stuff for the community. And basically what happened is the kids that did the shoplifting, they pled guilty, all of them, to misdemeanors. And in court, they said that they were culpable and that there were no racist reactions involved from the bakery. But that didn't stop the college from continuing on its destruction campaign of this bakery. So the Gibsons sue the college and allege libel, infliction of emotional distress, and interference with business relationships after the protests. They try to do moderation or mediation. The college refuses. Long story short, years later now, 3 years later, the judge awarded them, gosh, I think it's $35 million.
Oh, good.
Yep.
Good.
Yep.
I wish it was double that. I would love to see the college crippled.
Yeah, well, the college is having to pay $5 million to $8 million in damages to the bakery, $6 million to $9 million for Alan, one of the owners, and then $12 to $18 for David, another owner. I think it's the son.
Good. Every last dollar is completely justified. Good.
Yeah.
And you know, the students involved, they really fessed up to the misdemeanors and everything, and the college still pushed forward with the race narrative.
Yeah. It says like the person from the college says that, you know, the lawyer says tells the jury the college is sorry, and is working on improving student behavior. It's all because of you.
College is sorry and working on encouraging student behavior.
Yeah, basically. Anyway,
that's just
so
what it is.
I mean, we win.
Well, that
the
is
goodness
a win.
Wins.
Yeah,
and it's, you know, it's precedent at this point. It's precedent.
That's good.
So we got to win. There.
Would you say that it is? I mean, I know that this is the. This is between the bakery and the college at this point, but it's similar in a way to the Covington students, but only instead of a college, you're talking about the media.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, that will be interesting if that if this is, I mean, you're just swapping out the players in the game here. So instead of a college, it's a multi-billion dollar media conglomerate. So maybe that is going to also help their cause as well.
One could hope. And you know, the funny thing is, I got to look and see what's going on in that case today.
Yeah, where's it gone?
While we're talking here about
About quarter billion dollars of a lawsuit, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's big. And you know, what's interesting is I still don't see the Devin Nunes suit. I still don't see it. Like, he never filed it. I'm sorry. He never filed it.
Waiting back.
I mean,
waiting on a lot of things.
Can they just fix this, please? Pacer. Here it is. There's two of them open. Oh, there's three now. There is Sandman versus NBC Universal. There's Sandman versus CNN. And there's Sandman versus Washington Post. They're all still open. And the last thing to happen in the WAPO case, which was the first one filed, there was an order on June 6th. Oh, there's it looks like there's this matter is set for formal oral argument on July 1st. It appears to me reading this that they're arguing the motion to dismiss and it's going to verbal argument because he can't make a decision based on the oral arguments. I mean, on the written arguments.
So
the Washington Post is attempting to get the suit dismissed.
Right.
Based on, of course.
And how much is the dollar amount attached to either to all three of those things that you're looking at right now?
Yeah.
What's the tally between all three that they're looking for?
Well, I can't tell you the tally because it would take too long. But it's $250 million just from it's an excess of $250 million award just from WAPO and Bezos.
Okay.
So you got to figure it. He's going to be looking for like $1 billion. And I'll be honest with you, if he gets it, God bless him. God bless him.
Yeah. He can start his own newspaper now.
He can do some amazing stuff if he's not jaded and if he understands. You know what I mean? Like the kid has his life set for him to do some really awesome stuff. Let me look at this next one really quickly. Conflict check. The last thing in this one is videos were filed and stuff like that on the 12th, which was yesterday. It was a consent motion for leave to file more exhibits from Sandman's attorneys. So it's
if you were, how old is he? 16, 17, 18? 16. Okay. If you were 16 years old and you had almost $1 billion dropped into your lap because of these lawsuits against media companies that came after you wrongfully, what would you do? Seriously, like how obviously that would impact anybody's life at any age, whatever. But what would you do at 16 years old? What would you do, especially when you're looking at college coming 2 years down the line?
I would hope that my parents would step in, but it seems like he's really well-rounded. I think that I would decide what I want to do first. Honestly.
Would you still go to college?
I don't think so, unless I really wanted to.
I think that I may still go to college, but it would be 4 years of purely nothing but electives. I would not be seeking out any kind of a major. I would not tie myself down to anything. I would just be picking up classes of things that I think are most interesting for no other reason but pure interest.
Well, I mean, you don't have any pressure that, you know, you're set for life with $1 billion.
Absolutely.
You don't have to worry about anything for the rest of your life. You might as well just enjoy what you're learning, right?
Yeah, which is sad because it seems like the only way to really get a nice experience like that out of college is to have none of that pressure on you. Because you don't have to worry about what's coming next. And really, if you think about the ancient Greek way of educating, where you're all just getting around, it's an open forum topic or open forum discussion, and you're just really mixing it up with each other and testing each other's logic on certain issues and ethical dilemmas and whatever the hell it is. that sounds like such a better way to prepare people for having to go into the world.
I agree. I'm not like a big college fan.
No, I'm less and less. I was talking about this the other night. Everything that I did in college set me on the path to where I was doing now, what I'm doing now. Like we started our radio show in junior year of college. I was about 17 years old or so. No, sorry. Like 20 years old or so. And we started our thing there, but I didn't go to college for radio. I went to college for business management, and I eventually minored in history. And it was the friends I met. It was the things I started doing that continued through after college that had nothing to do with my major. So I think about really what I paid money for, and it had nothing to do with the education. It had all to do with the experiences. And I mean, in hindsight, I would not want to see any of those experiences erased or say I didn't need it, because in hindsight, I did need the experience. But college in itself is really – If people were just a little bit more experimental with their personal time, and they were a lot more interested in self-education and trying new things and following passions, everything that happened to me could happen to people outside of college, you know? And that's just what it comes down to. And especially now you see what kind of a really ugly environment that has been created on college campuses across the country. It really makes you wonder, between that and the financial burden, what the hell's the point?
I know. Yeah, I know. I have a very specific plan for my kids when they get older for school. Coming from personal experience, I went to college myself and I was like, why am I here? Why am I here? I'm not learning anything I will apply in my everyday life. I was more of one of those people who, like, I ended up at trade school. And I loved it. And I did amazingly well there. And I started my career when I was 21 instead of when I was 37.
Yeah. And listen, so, that does not go to say that if you are out there and you feel that burning passion to get into medicine, if you want to want to remove tumors from a human brain, that's where you have to go. You have to go there. But this pressuring kids from high school into the college feeder system, as if you need this, you need this.
You don't.
I mean, you don't. You really do not.
No, you don't.
Well, paradigms. Okay. Paradigms need to be broken. Actually, you know what, Tracy? We were talking about this before, too, as far as paradigms go. You go into medicine, and then when you get out and you're done and you're ready to practice medicine, it's just like my doctor. My doctor, who started a private practice, it's direct care with the patients. Lauren and I pay $200 a month, $100 each a month. And if we ever have a child, it'll go up to $250 a month for the entire family. And that is pretty much our insurance. We have a direct relationship with our doctor, she and her husband. I mean, it's everything from primary care to gynecological, all that stuff, all in one place. Here's a doctor who broke the mold and went out there and started a practice and is actually making it affordable. It's, you know, if it's just me, that's $1,200 a year I would be spending.
Yeah, but that doesn't include a lot of things.
Well, it doesn't include emergency room, but it's everything.
It doesn't include emergency room. Does it include, like, if you need x-rays or if you need blood work or if you need...
Yes, it does.
Oh, wow.
She went and she established relationships with all local labs and everything. I had a full physical, blood work and everything. With the blood work, I think it came out to maybe $200.
Hold on. I thought you were already paying.
Well, I pay $100 a month pretty much, and I can text, email, everything. She's on call whenever. But as far as going in and having your yearly physical and getting all the, you know, all of the bells and whistles attached to it, it's been the most affordable experience of my life.
Wait, so you have to pay a retainer and then you have to pay for extras?
Well, I pay for a retainer, which is pretty much $1,200
just for the privilege to see her.
For the privilege of having her around whenever I want.
Okay, then you go in, and then let's say you need your physical. You have to pay for the physical and for the testing.
No, the physical is That's already.
So you're just paying for the lab work at the physical.
Yeah, you're paying for lab work if you need any. And like I said, because the relationships that she went out and built, the lab work is unbelievably affordable compared to the lab work I've seen broken down through insurance billing and all that stuff. I know what it comes to, like Quest Diagnostics and all that. And the reason why I bring this up, of course, is because even if you do have to go to school for specialties and all that, it is up to the actual practitioners now to try to change the paradigm of how we actually administer care and services to people and actually make the marketplace easier for people to get involved. $100 a month to be able to have an intimate relationship with a doctor for no matter what. I've got her. No, I can text her right now if I want to. And it's I don't know. It's that's just what needs
it
to
happen. It works for you. That's great.
For somebody who needs something, absolutely. Because this is pretty much what I had. I was paying about, I think, $120 out of every paycheck when I worked when I was still personal training at a local YMCA over here. And I got into it because of the part-time insurance that they had. It was about $120 out of every paycheck, and I had emergency room care, and I can had some preventative care. It was very limited, but it was exactly what I needed for a healthy young person. And then, of course, came the ACA, and the whole plan was eliminated because I didn't have mammogram coverage. I didn't have all this other crap.
Well, you know, you need your mammograms at least once a year, Frank.
Of course,
at least.
And this is why I say, you know, you allow the market to create solutions for people that are tailored to what they need, and it starts becoming affordable again, you know?
Well, the market does that. That's what it, yeah.
It's working for me.
Completely different topic outside of the Sandman medical insurance. How did we get onto medical insurance? I forget.
We just followed the trail.
I don't know how we got here. Anyway, I have a clip from Sarah Carter that I want to play, and it kind of like lends itself into this whole thing where it's you know, Huber never did anything, and they've said this over and over. I've heard the Solomons and the Carters and the Hannitys of the world and the Joe DeGenovas of the world and all that say the same things. And then we'll get into some Sidney Powell talk. But let's listen to Sarah Carter here and what she has to say about Huber. And then there's another clip from the same interview that I thought was really good that we'll play. Here we go.
I tell you, Larry, right now with John Durham heading this investigation, and I've been hearing, actually, I'll tell you today for your listeners, I spoke to someone who would have knowledge of this, and they said, you know, State Department is running in circles. Some of those former players that we've been hearing so much about, very concerned about what's going to be coming out. Remember, because the State Department under Obama also played a significant role in this. We've seen a lot of information coming out there, and that possibly everything that John Huber was looking at, who was appointed by then Attorney General Jeff Sessions before Barr, is going to be turned over to Durham. So Durham has been actually given a very broad scope for his investigation. It will not just focus on the origination of the investigation into Trump. And I feel like I'm saying investigation over and over and over again.
So wait a second. I thought that Huber never did anything, Gateway Pundit. I thought that he never did anything. Now all of a sudden he's handing all of the evidence over to Durham. Which is it, people? Which is it? Sorry.
I can't wait to see the big reveal because I want to know which it is. I mean, even when it comes to Julian Assange's extradition.
Yeah.
You know, no matter what everybody has a theory as to where this is going and how it's going to end. All I know is that the next chapter is about to begin. He's coming to the United States. I just want to see the big reveals on all of these fronts.
When is he coming here? I didn't read a lot about that yesterday.
I didn't see the date. I just saw that the UK had signed the orders.
Yeah. Well, there's another part of this that I want you to hear, too. That's pretty interesting.
Let's do it.
I don't doubt that Sarah, you know, Sarah has sources. I know that Sarah's got her sources. So this is, yeah. Hold on, I'm scrolling through here. Okay.
Do think that there's so much that needs to be investigated. Here's my concern. Whenever they expand and expand and expand and it's bigger, it means that it takes longer. And I would love for there to be one person responsible right now for just figuring out who decided to start the surveillance process? Pre-FISA, I mean, who sent somebody, who sent Stefan Halper to talk to Carter Page? And who was the origination? And let's just get the paper trail on that. And it seems to me as they expand this thing, it means all of those things, yes, we may get an answer, but it could take over a year. It could take 2 years for that matter.
Well, absolutely. I think what one thing that I think the listeners will be grateful to hear, and you as well, is the intensity of which William Barr is handling this. According to every source I've spoken to, not William Barr himself, I have not spoken to him at all, so this is coming from first person, second person. Mm-hmm. Barr is very dedicated. John Durham is very dedicated. They have compartmentalized this investigation so that they can look at all of those aspects accordingly. So what we may see is portions of those investigations coming out, and then other pieces of the investigation that we would like to see coming out later. So we'll see it in parts, and that's what I've been hearing. And I think that's important.
Okay, because yeah, it is.
They're trying to look at the full scope of what happened here, and like you said, we would like...
So later on in this interview, she says that they have like a massive team working on this. Massive. So this is not just like a team of 10. This is like a massive team working on this case from inside the Justice Department.
I hate the sound of 2 years, 3 years. I hate the sound of years right now,
no,
Tracy,
we're so done.
Knocking on the door of the end of the first term.
I know, but you know what, Frank? Honestly, between, you know, in my opinion, as much as I agree with that statement that you made, no matter how long it takes, this needs to be fixed, whether Donald Trump is still president or not. And I understand what you're going to say. Like, if someone else takes over, they could just end the whole thing. But I want these people to be held accountable for everything that they've done, not just some things.
Well, that's why I think that the census is so important then. I mean, I seriously do not believe. Once again, I forgot who was bringing it up last night, but we're looking at all the turnout for Joe Biden's rallies.
Wait,
and stuff.
All five people that showed up to the rally?
This is what I'm talking about. And once again, I Brendan Dilley was on my show last night, and the first thing I asked him, it was just a quick quip. It was, hey, Brendan, you know, what do you think? It's already every last Democrat in the 2020 field right now is bludgeoning Trump in the polls. And meanwhile, once again, no one's showing up to their little get-togethers and coffee shops and bookstores and tents.
Can't believe they're doing it again. I can't believe they're doing it again. I said yesterday, don't worry, Democrats, every single candidate is handily destroying Donald Trump right now. You don't have to worry about going out to vote. They're going to win hands down. It doesn't matter who it is. Doesn't matter who it is.
So, you know, there's that where you see the polling stuff is already popping up. You know that this is like running parallel to how they were playing this in 2016. And then, you know, what really backs all that up? When you say that there's no enthusiasm for one person or the other, you see where the enthusiasm is, where Trump is putting together that rally in Florida where there's only 20,000 seats in the arena. There's 75,000 people that are trying to get in already. Mm-hmm. So you tell me, what is holding all this up? Well, they still are able to present you with popular vote numbers. They're still able to present us with all of this nutty electoral outcome data. The census needs to be so thorough and so strict. I just want, as long as we understand who's in the country and who is eligible to vote, then I really do think that we might have a chance for having them lose a couple more elections.
I saw Schumer complaining about the census and how Donald Trump was trying to corrupt the census on top of everything else he's corrupted in his day. He's trying to corrupt the census. And there were even Democrats underneath there that I saw. Chucky boy, we agree with you most of the time, but we need an accurate count of who's in our country to be able to know how to designate representatives.
Like, yeah, especially since Chucky in New York, especially in New York City, like California, all the money that is now being spent specifically for those who are not part of the country. I think that sooner or later, people, no matter how they vote, are going to say, we can't afford this anymore. Can't do this anymore.
On Wednesday's show, I wanted to say what my idea was, and I never got around to it. I had this idea, and I'm sure it's not the first time it's been thought of, but I said, you know, it would be great if there was like a conservative like network where people who are in California who are stuck because of the rat race there. You know, there's a constant rat race to be able to leave all my job. There's always something. If there was like a job placement service, a realtor service, a moving company service, you know, everything that you'd need to have in place as support, even maybe a GoFundMe with some money to help people, to conservatives to leave California if they want to, because a lot of them want to and they're stuck there.
The thing that sucks is, it's the same thing for me. I mean, I know that you had the balls to leave, but it's always just going to be about family. And it's always going to be about how deep your roots are. And, you know, for all of the complaining we do about California, I just hope everybody knows it's always California politics. It's never a denial of how beautiful the countryside is, how rich the farmland
is. It's not going to be that way for long if they keep this. Honestly, Frank, let's be honest, okay? The state is turning into a hellhole. It's turning into a hellhole. I'm sorry. And you know, to be honest with you, I was looking into leaving New York before my parents left New York. Like, my family left, so it was easier for me. I stayed there for a while after they left. I stayed there for a few years after they left. So it was a lot easier for me without my family there, but that wouldn't have stopped me. In other words, we were already looking into doing it before they left. So while I totally understand what you're saying, like, it made it so much easier to be like, all right, let's go there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I get what you're saying. It's not like I don't understand having your family somewhere and not wanting to leave because they're there. And also, you know, not necessarily having them understand why. If you're going to stay, I just ask that you really fight hard. That's all.
It's just the sad fact that we're dealing with these types of exodus is just this is just so sad.
It's sad, but people can't survive where they are, and they are powerless to stop the policies that are just going to make it worse. Like, it was bad enough before California decided that they were going to offer health insurance to every illegal immigrant living in the state. How are they going to pay for this?
They can't. That's why I wished at this point that all of these federal block grants
go away,
to sanctuary state, to declared sanctuary states and cities were already gone.
Like that Philly mayor. You're right. Like that Philly mayor dancing around in his office. Yay, we're a sanctuary city. Yay.
Yeah. You're a sanctuary city because you stole mom and dad's credit card. And you're using it to throw a really great party. So take the credit card away because they don't have the money for it. They're children. This is just so insane that this is just basic discipline.
It's gross. Yesterday there were a couple big news items that came out, Frank. There was Sarah Sanders stepping down as press secretary, which bums me out to no end.
To no end. Because if we get another Sean Spicer, I'm going to kill myself.
The only way I will be happy if it's Sean Spicier, the Sean Spicer parody account from Twitter.
Yes.
I said I would do it. I raised my hand.
That would be great.
I think it would be because, like, somebody said, like, hold on, I'm going to open it up because it was funny. I thought, anyway, but you know, I guess I'm biased against myself.
Yeah, I was watching that. I saw the goodbye. It was bittersweet. I mean, because she did such great job, and if she's leaving, it seems like she's leaving under good circumstances. I saw some people wondering if this was a switch up for for other reasons, and she seems, you know, coerced. I didn't see anything like that.
No.
She's been moving on.
She stayed longer than anyone else, 3.5 years, except one person who we'll talk about in a second. But Awakened Shinobi on Twitter said to me, it would be amazing. Actually, on page 34 of the dossier, it clearly shows. And I said, I'm sorry. Have you ever actually read the report from Horowitz? No. I mean, read the whole thing. Did you see the footnote on page 3? Well, then maybe you guys should do your job and come back to me with a question that doesn't answer itself if you do actual journalism. That would be like every single press conference that I led.
That would be great.
You guys are contradicting one another. You do understand. Like, it would be the most confrontational press conference or press circuit ever.
Tracy, I'd vote for you. I'd vote for you for press secretary.
I'll do it. If you're listening, President Trump, go out to your talent pool out here in the real world, where there are so many talented people out here waiting and eager to help you with no experience whatsoever.
Because I can hear you. I can see you pulling out paragraphs and pages and verses. Oh, man.
With a national audience.
Yeah.
Do you know the hate mail I would get? Do you know the there would be like shows dedicated to just attacking me? It would be like only because I wouldn't be doing anything but showing people facts.
You wouldn't be able to eat anywhere.
Oh,
in
no.
DC.
Forget it. I would need a food taster.
Yeah.
The other big piece of news yesterday, Kellyanne Conway. Did you hear about this?
I heard that she said something very political.
So I'll take that as a no. Kellyanne Conway was, there was an OSC recommendation, Office of Special Counsel for the government, for her to be fired for violating the Hatch Act. And like, I couldn't help but wonder if her husband was somehow like behind the scenes orchestrating this.
I wouldn't be surprised. The guy is insane. I have no clue. What is the basis of that marriage?
God only knows. How do you do it, Kellyanne? Listen, there have been rumors abound about her. Rumors that I won't repeat, but there is a very mixed bag of opinion on Kellyanne Conway. She is very close to the president. She is one of his, you know, top advisors. And this recommendation that she be fired, I haven't read that yet, but I'm going to be doing a piece on this today because I think it's really important. The White House came out and basically wrote a letter back to the OSC saying, you know, what you guys are doing here is absolutely disgusting. And here's all the problems with it. And here's all the things you did that were shady. Like, they gave them less than 24 hours to respond to a draft report and then released it anyway, even though they didn't have enough time. It appears to be a complete political stunt that's based on nothing but personal hurt feelings and resist.
Wow.
Because she does kind of destroy the press.
Yeah, she's good at that. I've seen a couple of pressers of hers, especially outside, where she has really taken it to them. And it was righteous, and I really enjoyed it. But on the other hand, there are just times where she's kind of done a little bit more damage. And
you can't sit on the couch with no shoes on when your legs crossed, Frank.
Yeah, the couch thing. Also, the fact I just don't understand the husband. I just don't understand the husband. Like, why? I hope that this has caused some friction at home. I hope that when she gets home some days, she screams in his fat face.
I mean, honestly, he could just shut his mouth out of respect for her.
You know, George, while I'm working here, can you please stop?
Yeah.
Whatever. I mean, who knows? I mean, there might be a day where I have to step down. Somebody comes in. There's a second term. Who knows? But can you just put a pause on it out of respect for me? I'm trying to do a job.
He's gross. He really is. And none of the stuff that he says is true.
But it's just, that's what I'm saying. The way that he acts and the patterns in which he tweets, it seems compulsive. Like he has no self-control. So I don't know if it's on purpose or if he has a mental illness.
He might. Diagnose him, because everyone else likes to diagnose people without ever meeting them. I think he does have a mental illness.
Tourette's or something.
to close out, not really. I mean, I don't know how long this will take us, Frank, to talk about, but I want to talk for a minute about this. I'm not even going to play it. What Trump said in this interview with Stephanopoulos, where he said, if they had information on an opponent, I'd probably do both. I'd probably take it. And if there was something concerning, I'd call the FBI. You know what I'm talking about, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Because isn't there new legislation, or somebody's talking about, we're trying to draft for legislation so that it's illegal to take opposition research from foreigners now?
I hope they do, because, and I hope it's retroactive, because everybody on the left would be in jail. Everyone. As a matter of fact, you have to remember, and everybody went straight to this, when Schiff was in on the phone with those pranksters who said that they were from Russia and they were Russian connected state, you know, people who had evidence that Donald Trump was doing bad things on with women in Russia. And Schiff ate it up. Did you ever hear that prank call?
No. Oh, wait. Yes.
I was going to say.
Yes, I did.
Oh, my gosh. It was beautiful. It was so funny. He completely fell for it. It was nasty how bad he fell for it. He was so excited about it. He could barely contain himself.
Yeah.
So there you go. And then not only that, but like, you know, Christopher Steele, Ukraine. Not many people have mentioned the Ukrainian involvement with the DNC. I was surprised yesterday. Oh, and I have to make a correction, too. Wednesday, I said, did you know that Jonathan Weiner was the brother-in-law of Cody Shearer? And no.
You asked that?
Yeah. And you said no.
Oh, yeah.
And
I still don't.
Yeah. Well, it's not true, so that's why.
Okay.
Yeah, Dan Bongino, I got that from Dan, and Dan made an error. It was actually Strobe Talbot and Cody Shearer. Strobe Talbot was a former State Department, or under Clinton, he was a Clinton guy.
Okay.
Anyway, I just want to make sure, because that blew me away. I was really surprised, and I didn't fact check it because it's Dan Bongino, you know.
Well, now it's been checked.
Yeah, he did a good job of correcting himself.
What else is going on around the today? What are we talking about today? What do you think about this this tanker, this Iran deal?
I don't. You know what? This is the first time I'll ever do this. I don't even want to talk about it.
Yeah.
Are you with me?
No, I'm with you. I'm with you.
I don't have anything to add. I don't have any opinion about it. I'm just so done with the back and forth on foreign policy. And we've got John Kerry trying to undermine. I just don't even. It makes me sick.
Yeah, I hope I hope the president stands strong on not starting another foreign war. I really hope he does.
You know, I think they're trying to goad him into starting a foreign war, and I think
absolutely.
He knows it. He knows it.
He has to. This would be it.
Go ahead.
Between another war starting overseas and between what's going on at the southern border, there is a number of ways for new catastrophes to start, and those would be very, very well timed new catastrophes. Mm-hmm. And I would have to imagine a full fledged war with Iran at a time like this, especially with the national debt and all of our economic issues. I know that the economy, the marketplace, is strong, but as far as our currency goes,
it's not.
You cannot put another war on top of this.
Not only that, but like, you know, they have to have into. I don't know what's. I haven't looked into it. You know what? Let's just stop because I'm uninformed.
Okay. Yep. Okay.
I'll share some opinion that's just ridiculously uninformed. There was something else going on though. You know what I'm frustrated about?
What?
This I can speak to. Mark Meadows on Sunday said that we'd get documents today or this week. And it's 11:05 a.m. on June 14th, Friday. And I see nothing. I see no documents, Frank. I see nothing new.
Yeah, well, weren't we supposed to get some kind of a drop on Jim Comey 4 weeks ago? And
yeah.
That was supposed to be 2 weeks.
Yeah.
We're you know, I'm waiting. I know that timelines shift and game plans shift, and there's actions and reactions and counter moves and all that stuff. But I mean, Joe DiGenova was talking as if, you know, we're going into the later phases of the book of Revelations.
Yeah. No, I know. You're right. Oh, by the way, I just saw really quickly. We'll go back to this in a second. But I saw that Devin Nunes retweeted Jeff Carlson's article.
Which article?
The one about the problems in the Mueller report.
Okay.
Good for him. He deserves it. We were supposed to get a ton of stuff. That's just not happening. We didn't get the Jim Comey thing. We didn't get any documents. I hope we get something at, you know, today at some point. I don't understand why we're having to wait so long. I'm getting frustrated.
Hey, Men in Black International is tanking. Could you have ever thought?
Wait, didn't the woman come out and say it should be Humans in Black or something?
I was joking to myself about that. I was joking to myself about that because there's a big billboard right near my house. And it's been up for a couple of, I don't know, it's been up there for weeks now where I see the Hemsworth guy and the chick. And I'm saying to myself, oh, God, okay. I know I can tell you everything about these character tropes. I can tell you what's going to go on, how the relationship is, how she's going to be a really wily, not going to play by the rules. He's going to have to adjust to her style, all that kind of stuff. And when are they going to turn this into Persons in Black?
Yeah.
Because it's going to have to happen. And so she actually said that?
Yeah, that's what I read. I read that.
Well, it took in $3 million last night.
That was a great movie when it came out, the first one.
Yeah, well, you're talking about the 1990s. You're talking about something brand spanking new. And, you know.
It was so good.
Yeah.
What other movies in the 90s did you really like?
Oh, God.
Armageddon?
Yes, for as cheesy. I still won't like watching Armageddon. It's for the laughs now. But, you know, back then when I actually thought that a lot of this was possible, it was awesome. And now I it's awesome just because on a cheesy kind of a bad level, too. But still, even with the cheesy badness, look at that cast.
Yeah, it was great.
It was awesome.
What about Sixth Sense?
Sixth Sense screwed with me. I saw that one in the theaters. That screwed with me. I'll tell you, the whole idea of coming home and finding somebody in your bathroom mentally disturbed, and they have made up the decision, they've made up their mind to kill you. Man, oh man, that scares the hell out of me. That could have been the whole movie right there, and it would have done the trick.
What about Matrix?
Matrix is awesome.
Yep.
Keanu Reeves is one of the good guys in Hollywood.
You know,
he should be emulated.
You've said that before. He's doing with Xbox. He's doing a game. And he's
Cyberpunk.
He's actually in it. And then there is what else from the 90s? I liked what's his name? He used to be my favorite directors, M. Night Shyamalan.
He did Sixth Sense.
But then he did another movie that I really liked. It was
Signs. That was 2003 or
two
or something.
2002, yeah. Mm-hmm. There was another movie that I loved in the 90s though that had to do with aliens and the White House.
Mars Attacks?
No.
That's another great one, though.
Mars Attacks is funny.
Mars Attacks, you want to talk about another great cast. Mars Attacks. What about Clueless? Were you a Clueless girl?
I did like Clueless.
I still love it.
As if.
Clueless is a great film.
You know who's really good at stuff like this? My husband is a massive movie buff, and he and his sister joke around all the time. They'll just text each other random movie lines from like classics, like cult classics from the 80s and 90s. Mm-hmm. And I have no idea what they're talking about. Like, I'm one of those people who can only watch a movie once. The only movie I could watch, well, that's a lie. There are a few that I could watch more than once. One of them that I can watch over and over and over again and laugh every single time is Austin Powers.
Really?
The first one.
I haven't seen that in years.
I laugh every time I watch it, like it's the first time I've seen it.
What about you have a very investigative mind, so you have to like Seven.
Yes. I like all those kind of films. I like that. I liked the Dante's Inferno movie. what was it? It was a another Nicolas Cage one.
Nicolas Cage.
I could swear it was Nicolas Cage that did like it was like Don.
Eight millimeter.
No, that was good though. I also liked the first Saw until they destroyed that freaking series.
Fight Club is technically 1990s. Silence of the Lambs pretty much started in the 90s, and well, 91. And 91 also is Terminator 2.
Yeah, that was not as good as 1, but good.
What?
Terminator 2.
Terminator 2 is not as good as 1?
Terminator 2 was the Liquid Man, right?
Yes.
Yeah, it was all right.
Okay, well, we're on opposite sides of this. Terminator 2, in my opinion, is one of the rare cases where the sequel completely blows out the original.
Wait, this is the one where he walks down the hallway with the Guns N' Roses box?
Yeah, yes.
Then you're right. I agree with you. I was wrong. Because the first Terminator is very old school. And is the Terminator 2 the one where he holds on to the chain link fence and you see the nuclear blast?
Yes.
Okay, then I like that one better.
You're right. Terminator 2 is, if you haven't watched it in a while, you should definitely watch it.
When I was younger, my dad was a tech buff. He used to have all kinds of technology. We had like this is what his hobby was. So basically, this is where money was invested in my home. And so we had a Laserdisc player. Do you remember those from back in the day?
Yep, the big ones.
Yeah, we had a Laserdisc player, and this was before DVDs. And we had so many movies. Another movie that I loved from the 90s, Beetlejuice.
Yes. You know, it's on Broadway now.
Is it?
My mother just went to go see it last week. She said it was fantastic.
Oh, that was actually 88. My bad.
Beetlejuice, I was hoping that they were going to do a sequel. I was thinking that Michael Keaton was going to come back and do it, especially since, you know, you make him up, you can probably hide his age.
Yeah.
But Beetlejuice is hilarious.
It is.
It's great. It's very weird.
Yeah, you know, who directed Beetlejuice?
Is it Tim Burton?
Yeah, Tim Burton. And you know who loves Tim Burton movies? My daughter. She loves Tim Burton. She watched, she loves Edward Scissorhands. She loved Coraline. I think he did that too.
I even love Tim Burton's rendition of Sleepy Hollow.
Depp has done some really good movies.
Anything?
Oh, no. Coraline wasn't Tim Burton, my bad.
It just doesn't matter to me what it is, because I know that he's going to commit to either one of a couple things. First of all, didn't he do, he did the Batmans too, the Michael Keaton Batmans, right?
Tim Burton?
Yeah, didn't he do the first two Batmans? He did with Nicholson and with Danny DeVito. He did Batman and Batman Returns, no?
He did.
Because that aesthetic, that dark night, overcast, kind of rainy city, or even with Sleepy Hollow, where you're talking about it's, you know, the 18th century over there, and it's just overcast, and it's woodlands, and it's very Halloween, very fall time, autumn. I love it.
Yeah. Yeah. I know that the feeling of his movies, you know his movies immediately when you put them on. You really do.
And of course, with all the Danny Elfman scoring, I love all the Danny Elfman music.
Yes, he picks good scores. What about this one? This show is so different than normal, but I think it's fun.
It's Friday. It's Friday.
It is Friday. What about? Damn it, I forgot. Oh no, I was going to bring up a really good movie from the 80s.
Oh, I'm thinking 90s.
I know, but it was an 80s movie that I was just like, oh my gosh, I used to watch this when I was a kid. Oh, I can't believe I forgot. Oh my gosh, this is painful.
16 Candles?
No. Although Teen Witch followed me throughout my entire teenage years.
Is it a Molly Ringwald movie?
Teen Witch?
No, I'm just talking about whatever movie you're listening
to. No. Okay. It was a dramatic movie. It wasn't a girly movie like that. I don't remember. Damn it.
I actually, it was just last week I realized, I always thought that Groundhog's Day was like 88, 89. I didn't know it was 93.
I didn't know that either. I thought Groundhog Day was in the 80s.
Yeah, no. I'm telling you, 90s were amazing for movies.
I can't come up with any good movies from the 2000s, really. Anything from you? Oh, Crash was really good.
I don't know. starting off 2000, one of the best movies, one of my favorite movies, Gladiator.
I was just going to say that.
That's number one. But, you know, you got a lot of stuff.
Memento was good.
I never saw that.
Oh, it's good. You should see it. The X-Men movies were pretty good in the beginning.
Well, you have all the Dark Knight films, then, I guess. You also have...
Meet the Parents.
Yeah.
Final Destination started.
All the Lord of the Rings. Yep. All of the Star Wars films started coming out. Well, 99 kicked off all the prequels and stuff like that. So, I don't know. There's a lot of stuff there, I guess. But it's not like the 90s. There's something else there. In the 2000s, everybody started flashing all the CGI a lot.
Yeah,
it got a lot less practical.
Oh my gosh, Home Alone was the 90s.
Yeah.
We're old. Ghost.
I talked about Ghost the other night. I played Willie Lopez's death scene on my show the other night.
Flatliners?
I never saw that.
Oh, that's a good one. All the Child's Play came out the second one came out in the 90s. Dick Tracy, my all-time most scary movie that haunted me. I was made fun of incessantly.
Really? Because of Dick Tracy?
All the kids in my school used to call me Dick Tracy, and it was like, it was horrible.
Oh, Dick Tracy. Okay. Okay, so it wasn't in the actual movie that scared you.
No.
Okay, Dick Tracy. That's funny.
It was horrible. It was really, really, it scarred me. Anyway.
I don't want to go to school. They keep calling me Dick Tracy.
It didn't go away, Frank. It didn't go away.
I know. Well, listen, I got made fun of because of the size of my head. Constantly. They're all assholes to me, the girls especially. My mom kept telling me, it's because they like you. It's because they like you. I said, yeah, well, it doesn't feel good. And
it's your barber's fault, really, if you want to.
Well, no,
Russian barber.
I'm talking about elementary school. I had a lot of hair. It was a rat's nest of hair. And my head is big enough as it is, but I really grew into my head.
Pictures so, that didn't happen.
There was that, but they're just ruthless. Girls are ruthless. They say that little boys are bad. Girls are ruthless.
Yeah, little girls ruin little boys. And I can tell you from experience, because I have a son and a daughter.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm still not remembering that movie. It's going to bother me until I do. Goodness. But hey, I mean, you guys have been listening to the Dark to Light podcast with
Frankie Val on the drums
and Beans on this fun Friday show, which you can hear 2:30 Eastern, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. That doesn't make any sense. On iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and RadioInfluence.com. We will see you on Monday.
Bye-bye.
This is an Ian Beckles Flavor in Your Ear quick fix on Radio Influence.
On everything I love, I'm a lot of things. Coward ain't one of them, all right? I'm a lot of things. I'm not the guy who steps backwards. I'm the kind of guy who steps forward. I'll be the guy to get shot. There's no doubt about it, okay? There's no doubt in my mind. And this dude, Scott Peterson, which is facing, obviously, with the Parkland shooting, everybody wants to make this guy, who was a security guard, responsible for the kids. That's not on Scott Peterson. Is Scott Peterson a coward? Yep. Yep. You sat and listened to kids get shot and you got a gun and you didn't go up in there? That makes you a coward. I mean, literally, out of all the stories I heard, that's probably one of the more cowardice stories I've heard. Yes, no doubt. You're a coward. It's the problem is the school board employed somebody that was a coward. That was the problem. Go arrest those people. Scott Peterson knew he was a coward. So now our country is going to start making up rules. We're going to put you in jail for the rest of your life because you're a coward. Bullshit. He don't deserve to go 1 second in jail. He's going to be a coward the rest of his life. When he looks in the mirror, he's going to see a coward. That's jail. I couldn't imagine waking up in the morning and knowing all those kids got shot and I didn't help. Can you imagine being in that jail?
You can find Ian Beckles' Flavor in Your Ear on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and RadioInfluence.com.